I'm not doing as much preaching around at the moment. I'm preaching at Bracken Ridge a lot, but not in other churches. But Matt put the pressure on me, so I caved in and said I'd come today. I actually love preaching for a number of reasons. I mean, I love preaching. But one of the other things I really enjoy about preaching is that my Fitbit thinks that when I'm preaching, I'm actually walking. Although I just stand here, it must be because every time you move your arms, it thinks you're walking. So I do lots and lots of steps. So it means I don't have to exercise for the rest of the day after I preach. As Mark said, we're going to have a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 3 today. But let me give a bit of an introduction to that. I live very much in the present. I've got a very poor long-term memory, which has some disadvantages. I can't remember the childhood of my kids very much at all. So they tell me stories about what happens and I sort of listen with great interest because I can't remember that. It's very difficult for me choosing a movie to watch, you know, because I can't remember what I've watched and what I haven't watched. So I always need Deb, my wife, around when I'm picking movies. The upside to that is I can watch a movie again for the third time as I did the other night and it's all new to me. It's fantastic. Like it's very exciting. It also means that I can say to people that tell me anything you like. Your secrets are safe with me because I'm not going to remember them, all right? So if you want to share something deep, come to me afterwards. I'll have forgotten by the time I'm back here next time. Not everyone, of course, is like me. Some of you have brilliant memories. We went on a cruise a couple of years ago with some of Debbie's friends and we'd sit around the table there and they would talk about, they were our age, you know, they were talking about their childhood and schools and teachers and kids and things that people said to each other. And I just sat there astounded that people could remember all of these things about their lives. But whether you remember a lot about your life or just a little bit, some of the things, there are some stages in life where you do become a little bit more introspective, a little bit more reflective of what life's been like and what's happening in your life, what's happened in the past, what's happening in the present, what may be going to happen in the future. And you stand back and you reflect a little bit. I mean, Anzac Day is a bit like that for us, isn't it? It's a sort of we sit back and we reflect a little bit about what people have done in the wars, what they're doing at the present, you know, and we're reflective and appreciative. And those sorts of times in life are good. A particularly important time for guys, I think, is when guys reach middle age and they realise that all their dreams are actually not going to be fulfilled. They're not going to achieve the things that they thought were possible. There's a need to reflect. If you don't do the reflection thing, you buy a sports car and you pretend, you know. Sorry if anyone's got a sports car here. Nothing against sports cars. But like, you know, you try and hold on to what you have. But if you stand back, you reflect and you reflect on some of the losses, some of the things that won't be achieved, and then you move on well to your next stage of life. For women with children anyway, one of the key times for reflection often is when the children are no longer dependent on you. And that's a significant time for mothers to think, well, what is life about and where am I going when my kids don't need me anymore. But there are special times in life where it's very important for us to reflect and think about life. But it's actually healthy for us regularly to reflect on what life is about. Socrates, who was an ancient Greek, said the unexamined life is not worth living. Now, he was a philosopher and that was his job to philosophize about life. So obviously he's going to say something like that, but it is true that reflection is where wisdom develops and where perspective grows. A guy called Solomon, King Solomon, did reflection really, really well. He had experienced the best of life, like everything that life could offer, Solomon had enjoyed it. He was incredibly wealthy. He was brilliantly inventive. He was passionately sexual. He had 700 wives and 300 lovers. I kind of figured, I worked that out, that if you had a wedding every week, it would take you 14 years to marry 700 wives. So now we know a lot of those were political alliances and all the rest. But anyway, he was obviously a very sexual person. So he had time to experience so many things. And God had also made him very smart, very intelligent. And he spent, you would wonder where with all those wives and lovers he'd have time to think at all. Do you know what I mean? But obviously he could withdraw and think about life and what it was about. And like Socrates, he was a philosopher. And so he wrote a book, which is kind of like his reflections on life, his conclusions about what life is like and what the meaning of life is and what the purpose is and what you get out of life. He thought about all those, having experienced so much in his life, he was able to reflect and think about those things. And he wrote a book about it, and Ecclesiastes. And most books have a blurb, you know, a quick summary of the book. And he puts his blurb in the second verse of Ecclesiastes 1. And this is the summary of his book. Meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. Now that's a book you want to read, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like that sounds really interesting and a very exciting book to read. The more Solomon thought about it, the more he reflected, the more he came to the conclusion, despite all that he had and everything that he experienced, he came to the conclusion that basically life stinks. Like basically life is pretty insignificant, pretty pointless. And Ecclesiastes, the book of Ecclesiastes, is his explanation of this, how he came to these conclusions about life. And part of his problem with life were the seasons of life. And this is where he gets to in chapter 3 of his book. And if you're old enough, you'll probably know this passage very well. Because the birds and then the seekers, does anyone remember the seekers? Right, a few of you do, all right, okay. Wrote a song, well, the birds originally, the seekers took it up, a song that actually uses the words of this passage. It's got that captivating title, Turn, 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 for every season, Turn, Turn, etc. But it comes to the point that there is a time for a whole lot of different things to happen in life, a whole lot of different seasons of life, you might like to say. And we're going to read this through. It's written, you've got to get the idea though, this is written as poetry, you know. So it'll say there's a time to hate. So the idea is you don't sit down and think, when's my time to hate? You know, you sort of see that just life goes on and it revolves and the seasons come and go. Now, that's probably pretty small there, so I don't know if you can read that. But let me read it through anyway, and you can get the feel. I just want you to feel the flow of this. There's a time for a whole lot of different seasons in life. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. Line dancing, we have it here in the church. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. You get the rhythm of this? There's times for a whole lot of different seasons in life. Now the question is, was Solomon being positive about these changing seasons in our lives, or was he being negative about them? Is this seasons in life a good thing, or is it a bad thing? Is a seasons helpful for a satisfying, significant life, or is it actually a detriment to living a significant and satisfying life? And this is the question that many scholars have explored. Now, there are many good things about changing seasons. We're at a time of the year where seasons are changing, aren't they, at the moment? And I enjoy the change of season. We've had summer. Summer's great for a lot of things. But now we're coming into autumn and then we'll move into winter. The changing seasons in life mean variety in what we do. Our life changes as the seasons change. We're in the grandparent season at the moment, you know, and that's a good season. I am so glad we're not in the parent season anymore, you know. There's a reason why when you get older you don't parent anymore, you know, because grandparents much easier than parenting because you take them and you give them back, you know, and then parents have to worry about the fact that you filled them up with lollies. So there's that variety in life that the seasons provide. Seasons also mean that tough times don't last forever. Eventually, the tough season will become a good season. The mourning season will become a mourny. The mourning season becomes a rejoicing season. So another good thing is you're not going to be stuck forever in a bad season if seasons of life come and go. And that's certainly true for me. You know, I've had a hard working season and now it's not quite so hard. It was challenging and difficult at times, but now I can relax a little bit more. And so you know that if you're going through a tough season, eventually it's going to change. So there's lots of good things about changing seasons. I don't think Solomon was thinking about that. I think actually he was quite negative about the fact that seasons in life change. And the reason I think that is what he says straight after this. So a time for love, a time to hate, a time for war, time for peace. And then he says, verse 9, what does the worker gain from his toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on people. These seasons that we go through, these changing seasons in life, he reckons are actually a burden for us. And here's his problem. The fact is, you just can't control the seasons. No matter how hard you work, no matter what you achieve, the seasons are going to change anyway. And what has been good is going to turn to difficult and bad. And this is incredibly disappointing, isn't it? Like you work so hard, you achieve so much, you pray, you believe, you do all of these things, and then the season changes and you go into a tough season. I observed that in my dad's life. Dad passed away 2 years ago, and he had some great seasons. Dad was very effective in serving God and in many other ministries as well, and achieved so much and was going flat out into his 80s. But I tell you what, his last season was the toughest season of his life. It was very difficult for him as he couldn't achieve and do the things that he was used to doing. And Mum passed away and he was doing it by himself. It was a very difficult season. And that's what Solomon is saying. Like, the fact is, no matter what you've done, no matter how much godly you are, no matter how much you achieve, the fact is the seasons keep changing and you can't do anything about that. You just can't stop the difficult seasons from coming. In the West, I think we're more protected from some of the changes in seasons than people in different parts of the world are. We can try and help our health to a large degree. We're unlikely to starve to death or anything like that. But still, seasons still change. Do you remember Hugh Hefner? Does anyone remember? Maybe you're not supposed to say Hugh Hefner here anyway. But anyway, Hugh Hefner was a guy that, if anyone was trying to stop the seasons, it was Hugh, right? Because he was 80-year-old. I don't know. Did he get into his 90s? I don't know. But, you know, and he kept on having all these young... I remember seeing him on TV gyrating with these young girls, you know. And it was just sad and pathetic. you can't stop the seasons. And, of course, he's gone now. Take Australia's economy. You know, when I've grown up in a very prosperous time for Australia, on the back of agricultural and mining, Australia's done very well, and those in my generation, to a greater or lesser degree, but have benefited from that. We've been through a very good season, but the tide is changing, and agriculture is not so profitable, and mining with the downturn and world economy, there's some difficulties with that as well. And it's very, very likely that my kids won't do as well, prosperity-wise anyway, as what we've done. Is that any fault of theirs? No, of course not. It's just changing seasons. Season, they're going to grow, or they're growing up in a different season from what we grew up in. And this happens everywhere. It happens in organisations as well. It happens in churches. You have good seasons, then you have tough season. Breckenridge, the church where I'm at, has been through a very tough season the last year or two. It's been very difficult time. I remember I was a teacher many, many years ago, and my first placement was a place called Baralabar, and it was a little tiny high top, which means a high school. I was a high school teacher on top of a primary school. Just went up to year 10. And anyway, I went there, and it was just such an exciting time. God did a very powerful work. Teachers became Christians. Kids became Christians. It was just fabulous, you know. And there was about 100 in the high top, so 100 kids in the high school part. And at one stage, we had 60 of them coming to a Christian group that we were running in the school. So, like, it was just revival stuff. Do you know? It was very, very exciting. So after 2 years at Baralabar, I was transferred to Rockhampton to a proper big high school. And my thinking was, if God can do that in a little place like Baralabar with 100 kids, imagine what he's going to do in a high school with 600 kids. You know the most we ever had in our Christian group at the high school that I was at? 6 kids. How come? Like, I was more better equipped. I was ready for it now. I'd grown a bit spiritually. I was a better leader. How come? Changing seasons. That's what Solomon says. No matter how hard you try, no matter how much work you do, and Solomon had worked really hard, no matter how many sacrifices you make, the season changes. So what's the point? That's what Solomon's saying. It's frustrating. It's disappointing. No matter how good your life might be at the moment, tough seasons are coming and you cannot do a thing about it. Oh, it's not that there aren't good seasons. There are some wonderful seasons. Solomon knew that. Verse 11, it says, he's made everything beautiful in his time. He's a set eternity in the hearts of people. I'm sure that you've had some fabulous times in your life. Let me tell you, there's the holiday season. You know, that's a fantastic season. You go on holidays, you enjoy creation, you enjoy wherever, you know, whatever you enjoy travel, you enjoy whatever it might be. But holiday seasons are fantastic. There's the falling in love season. I don't remember anything much about my past. I do remember falling in love with Deb like 40, 50 years ago. No, it can't be that long, surely. But anyway, a long time ago, you know, I remember that season. Like, it was a fabulous season. There's the everything looks good season. Do you know what I mean? Where things are just, everything comes together in your life and it's just wonderful. Or the great achievement season, you know, where you're actually making a difference and you're seeing some of the fruit of the hard work that you're putting in. They're certainly good things. Solomon says God set eternity in the hearts of people. And like the good seasons or the good times are a little bit of a taste of what eternity is going to be like. Like, that's what it's going to be like forever. So we experience that. Touches of beauty in our lives. But the difficulty is that the better the seasons we go through, the more exciting, the more rewarding, the more enjoyable the seasons we go through, the harder it becomes when the season changes. Isn't that true? Like, the more you enjoy something, the harder it is when things look very, very different. If you know great health and then you experience dreadful pain, that's worse in a way than if you've gone through your life struggling with your health. I've just recently took the funeral of the wife of a mate of mine, Lynette had cancer for 10 years, and so they had a fair while to prepare for it, and they did a lot of travel and did a whole lot of things together, and that was wonderful, and they enjoyed that, but it's just made it even more difficult for Tim now that she's gone. He said to me the other day, he said, tears running down his face, he said, I've lost my best friend. If he wouldn't have loved so deeply, it wouldn't be so hard now. We've at Breckenridge, we've got some links with some orphanages in Thailand. And these are AIDS orphanages, so a lot of the kids have AIDS, and most of them are orphans anyway, or can't, or abandoned by their families. And so these kids have done it really, really tough. People who go over there come back and always say, these kids are so, so lovely, they're so happy. And I figured the reason that they're so happy is that they haven't experienced the wonderful things that so many of us have experienced. So it's not so hard for them going through the things that they're going through. So Solomon says, the seasons are a pain. Things happen, you just can't predict them, you just can't control them. Good comes, bad comes, no matter what you do. And the better the season you have, the likelihood is the worse the next season is going to be. And so Solomon says, I just can't fathom this. This just doesn't make sense. This really is a burden. Well, that's it. Pretty depressing, really, isn't it? Not a lot of help in this sermon, just a dose of reality. So Solomon concludes his dirge, right, on the seasons. And this is how he concludes it. Let me go on and read the next little bit. Verse 12. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. What? How did he, like, have I missed something here? Like, he's just talked about how terrible everything is, and now he's saying, oh, and let's be happy and enjoy God. Like, let me just read it again. Maybe I missed something there. I know that there's nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. The clue, he's been coming to this, but the clue is in the next verse, verse 14. Let me just read that. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that people will revere him. The clue is that in these verses, Solomon introduces God. Most of Ecclesiastes is written to people about life. A phrase that he uses is under the sun. So again and again he uses this phrase, under the sun, under the sun. And what he's really saying by that is, what does life look like if this is all we've got? If we're living under the sun? If the experiences of life, that there's nothing beyond that, there's the sun and that's all, this is the life that we're living. Then he says the seasons then, it feels like, if it's life under the sun, do you know what I mean? If this is all we've got, if we take God out of the equation, or a God that is actually interested out of the equation anyway, if we just have life under the sun, then we just have these revolving seasons ending up at a pretty bad season usually, a pretty tough season usually. If this is all that we've got, it just feels like a Ferris wheel. Do you know what I mean? Like, life just feels like a Ferris wheel. We're going up, we're enjoying it, we're seeing more, this is fantastic, and then we get to the top, and then it goes back down the other side, and this is what life is. It just goes round and round and round and round, and Solomon is saying, and that feels pretty meaningless. But that's, from our perspective, that's under the sun. Actually, God is at work. And the fact is, God is at work in all the seasons. Not just the up seasons. God is just as much, if not more so, at work in the down seasons. Let me just reinterpret. I didn't actually give the right exegesis of verse 11. Verse 11 said, he's made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of people, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. So he has made everything beautiful in its time. What he's talking about there is not just the good times, but all the times. That everything God does is beautiful at the time that he does it. So every season has an important role in what God's wanting to do in our lives and what God's wanting to do through our lives. Everything is beautiful. Nothing happens by accident. So God is at work in the crying season as well as in the dancing season and in the tearing season as well as the mending season. That God is purposely developing his plan, that everything fits together in God's world. If it's just life under the sun, it feels like this Ferris wheel. This is just going round, which is very unfair because you can't hold on to the good stuff. But if you see beyond that and you see here is a God that's actually in control and is at work and is producing something from this world and from our lives and in our lives that we would never dream of, then that makes things very different. Let me give you an example of that, illustration of that. Just say, give example of a chessboard, a chess game, all right? So here we are in a chess game. Let me be the bishop, all right? That's fairly appropriate, I think, right? Let me be the bishop, all right? So here am I, the bishop. I'm in this chess game. So what happens to me? Well, I sit there for ages, and then finally I'm on the go. So I'm heading off, and then I sit there again. I just stay in the same place, and now I'm moving back over the same ground that I've just taken. And like for me, it feels like some random stuff's happening in this game, and I'm just going all over the place. And there seems to be no significance or purpose. Sometimes I'm going forward, sometimes I'm going backwards. Sometimes I'm just sitting there doing nothing at all. And it all just feels like things are just happening around me. But is that the case? If you've got a master chess player, of course not. Like, it's just as important when I'm moving backwards as when I'm moving forward. It's just as important as when I'm sitting there, feels like I'm doing nothing. I'm actually doing a lot, although I just don't see it. As a chess piece, I don't see it. I have a very significant role in the game. And that's what our lives are like. That we're part of this incredible plan that God has. This work of God that he's doing to bring his kingdom, to establish his kingdom, and we have a significant part to play. And sometimes God is it seems to us that nothing much is happening around the place. But God, of course, is at work doing what he chooses to do, and he's developing us and growing us and using us in ways that we would never imagine. I've taught a fair bit at college about the strength journey and the depth journey. This is a very simple way of looking at the seasons. But we go through what I call depth journey, cross journey, you might like to say, suffering journey, being journey, where God is working on us. He's working through us, but he's mainly working on us. And that's a tough time, that's a difficult times that we go through. It's the times of failure, it's the times of loss. We go through that. That's the cross journey, absolutely essential, as Philippians 3 says. This is something I want to enjoy. I want to experience the suffering of Christ on the cross. And we just celebrated how important that is to us. And then there's a resurrection journey. And that is the journey we go on where we're achieving things and doing things and God's working in his power and we see what God can do in us and what God can do through us. And that's an exciting and faith-filled time and we learn to pray and experience God's, and we usually learn to use our gifts and everything. So there's these two journeys, if you want to look at the seasons, very simply, these two journeys that we're on. And both of them are essential. Imagine what it was like if it was all just resurrection journey and we never went through the cross journey. And we never learned what it was to be God's and to trust God and to hold on to God when we have nothing else. Imagine what it would be like then. Imagine if it was all cross journey and we never had any resurrection journey in our lives. It was all suffering and pain and difficulties and we never learned to see what God could do through us as we prayed and believed and expected God to work. And so we go through both of these journeys. And I know that from experience, and often we put them together. But sometimes in reflection, as you look back, you can see times in life when you're mainly doing cross journey and mainly doing resurrection journey, mainly doing strength journey or mainly doing depth journey. And I went through a time of life like that. So I was at Bracken Ridge at the time. I was senior pastor there, and we were going through great blessing, right? very powerful time, resurrection time in a sense. You know, God was working in his power. And God came and he said to me very clearly, he said, through Joseph's dream, you might be familiar with that, he said, 7 good years and 7 tough years. Now, I was in the good years at the time, so I didn't take much notice of that. Do you know what I mean? Like, this was just good. God was at work. Things were happening. And it was a very, very, very fulfilling time for me. And so we went through this, and then the season changed. And it changed quite abruptly for me. And it was started off with some personal stuff that and my family and my life that we had to deal with, and it impacted the church as well. And then I went to the college in that time, and it was a very tough time at the start of the college as well. And so I went from this time of strength journey, and quite suddenly, according to what God had already said, because he'd predicted this, he'd prophesied this to me, that this was going to happen, and it changed. And I hadn't done anything wrong. It wasn't that I would lack faith. It wasn't that I still wasn't believing and expecting what God was going to do. It just changed. And God took me on a different journey. And as I went through that journey, it was difficult for me. But I tell you what, God forged in my life stuff then that I would never have thought he would have done. Remember someone coming to me, he'd been at Bracken Ridge at the really exciting times, and came back and met me, you know, like it was about 10 years later. And she said to me, she said, John, you're not the same pastor that was pastoring Bracken Ridge. There's something much deeper and more beautiful about your life now than it was back then. And that's what the depth journey does. So, here is what Solomon's advice. All right, let me finish with just a couple of words of advice. Here's what he says. In the light of this idea of the journeys, this idea of seasons of life, that things will change, and without God it all seems very meaningless. I tell you what, this is a wonderful thing we have to offer people who are not Christians, because that's what they're going through. They're living life under the sun. And really, when they come, if they reflect on that, they will find that there is no significance in life. And this is something, because with a God, it just makes so much difference to our life and our direction and where we go. All right, so here we go. Here's some advice from Solomon. First is from verse 11. He's made everything beautiful in time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of people. So the first thing is to recognize eternity. It's in your heart. And what it means is that when we recognize eternity, right, that this is not about now, that this is about eternity, then it means that we don't have to get all our rewards now. Everything doesn't have to work out now. There's eternity in our hearts. Like, we've got a long time to receive the blessing of God. And it gives us a bigger vision. It's not just about what's happening in my life now. It's a much bigger vision. It's an eternity vision. It's a vision of what God wants to do forever. So the first thing is to recognize eternity. This is not where it's at. There's eternity to come. The second thing is that he suggests is to respect God. This is in verse 14. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it, nothing taken away from it. God does it so that people will revere him, to honor God. And so when we go through the enjoyable seasons, we honor God. We say, God, thank you. This comes from your hand. This is not a result of my hard work or my prayer, although you might have used those things, but this is a gift from you. And I appreciate that hugely, and thank you, and I respect you and honor you for that. And then when we go through the tough seasons, we recognize, God, I respect you, like Job did. Do you know what I mean? God's given me. God's taken away these things. I trust him. Lord, I respect you. I don't like this season. It's a bit tough and a bit difficult for me. And some of you are going through it at the moment. But Lord, I trust you and I respect you. And I know that you have purposes and plans, and I don't see all of that at the moment. But I trust you for that. And I respect you and I honor you for that. There is a lie that our world says, and that it says to us that only good seasons matter. Only good seasons matter, you know. So it's only when you're satisfied and happy and everything's working out, that's the only thing that really matters in life. And it's just not true. It's not true. The tough seasons and the difficult seasons are just as important, if not more important, in God's work. And so we trust God and we respect God. And we can't confront the lie that life is about good seasons. Life's not about good seasons. Life's about God. Life's about growing in God and serving God. That's what life's about. And all sorts of seasons count in that. And the last one is that, this is in verse 13, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. God gives us a gift in that the boring seasons and the frustrating seasons and the fun seasons and the painful seasons and the passionate seasons and the success seasons, they're all part of God's work, and so we can find happiness in whatever season we're in. And so Solomon says, find satisfaction in their toil. This is the gift of God. And so with God, today, no matter what season you're going through, you can find joy in God. You can find satisfaction in what's happening in your life, even if it's difficult and even if it's tough, that this is God at work in your life. It won't be wasted. God is moving. So our grand master chess champion is moving towards this incredible victory. We have a touch of it in our hearts. We have a touch of eternity in our hearts. We vaguely see what it's going to be like. And so we trust God and appreciate him today. And knowing that God is at work and is still at work in the middle of all our seasons, he's bringing his plan to completion. His kingdom is on the move and growing, and we're part of that. And so we say, trust God. I can trust God because he is in charge. Let me pray together. Lord, our world says that only good seasons matter and that seasons are supposed to get better and better and better. And of course they don't. Of course they don't. Never have, never will. And Lord, I pray that with this touch of reality, we might find peace and joy in whatever season you've placed us in at the moment. Some of us, Lord, it's just good season at the moment. It's enjoyable. It's peaceful. It's successful, whatever it might be. And I thank you for that. All that comes from your hand, Lord, and we appreciate that. It's going to get even better, of course, in the future when you return, Lord. How fantastic that's going to be when we live for you, Lord. But particularly, Lord, I ask for those that are doing it tough at the moment, Lord, for whatever reason. Maybe it's family stuff, maybe it's work stuff, maybe it's personal health. Lord, lots of different reasons why we do it tough. Maybe it's ministry. But Lord, I just pray, Father, that today your hand, they will hear your voice saying, it's okay, it's okay. This is just as important as the good stuff that you've experienced. The world doesn't know that, but it is. That I'm at work, I'm doing stuff in this season, and you're going to be transformed by what I'm doing. So trust me and hold on to me. And I pray, Lord, that we might find today, this day, this Sunday, satisfaction in our lives, in our families, in our serving you, Lord Jesus. And I pray this in your name. Amen.